This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Look into any operating room and odds are it will be a man wielding the scalpel. Women are making great gains in medicine, but many disciplines and many senior management jobs in the medical world are still dominated by men. Consider neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons. Fewer than 5% of them are female.
And it isn't just exclusion. There's outright hostility as well. Explicit gender discrimination was alleged in the big $7 million settlement awarded last month to Dr. Carol Warfield at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Warfield told me that sexism in highly specialized fields like surgery often goes unreported.
It's at many, many different levels, and it can be extremely toxic. And these women who have worked very, very hard to get where they are, I mean, when you think about the amount of training one needs to do to be a higher-level surgeon or anesthesiologist or anyone in academic medicine, to risk that is a very, very difficult thing for these young women to do.
Then there's the money. A study published in 2011 found that women across the entire medical field are paid less and promoted more slowly than their male counterparts.
Joining us now to talk more about the challenges women face in the medical field is Margaret Carey. She's a doctor and leadership coach for physician executives, and she wrote a chapter in the new book, Lessons Learned, Stories from Women in Medical Management. Margaret Carey is with us from New Haven, Connecticut. And Margaret, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And listeners, we would like to know during this conversation what you think can be done to break through the glass ceiling in the medical field. If you have a friend or a family member or anyone you know who's had a personal experience with what it's like to be a female surgeon or a woman in medicine, tell us your stories. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Margaret Carey, in the Carol Warfield case we just mentioned at Beth Israel Deaconess, some of the alleged sexism was very, you know, explicit, like the male chief of surgery allegedly being abusive and demeaning to her, once letting a door shut on her when she was following him into a room, replying to one of her male colleagues when she spoke to him. But we also hear that female surgeons can experience subtler obstacles than men, like pressure to behave a certain way or feeling conflicted about family responsibilities in a way men might not. Do you have any real-world examples of that that would help us better understand what it's like to be a woman in medicine?
Well, I'd like to share when I started college. I was started college pretty young, and my counselor at college asked me what I wanted to major in, and I said, pre-med, I want to be a physician. I've wanted to be a doc since fourth grade, and he said, you can't be a pre-med major. Girls don't go to medical school.
And when was this? Could I ask what year we're talking about
now? Sure. This would have been 1967, fall of 67.
And so that was a long time ago. Do you think that's still, I mean, I think things have changed. How much would you say it's still like that today?
Things have changed. I think what's happened is many of the things have gone underground. I also think that there's a culture. Surgeons tend to have, I coach a fair number of surgeons, and there's a cultural issue there. Things like this kinds of behavior, say if you're trying to save somebody's life who's trying to die in the operating room, you have to be pretty abrupt and brusque, or if you're in an emergency room. Whereas if you're working with people outside or taking care of your family, you need different communication skills.
So having to be abrupt or brusque in the emergency room is just a necessity based on how urgent that kind of work can be. But tell us when you think that crosses the line, or how common is it to cross the line and for women surgeons and women doctors to feel that this is a hostile environment?
Sure. Let me tell you another story. So a woman several years my junior, who's a physician, a plastic surgeon, and happens to be very small physically, and a ice skater, was, when she went into the surgeon's lounge as a resident, was physically picked up and carried over to the nurse's lounge. Again, that was several years ago, but that does still happen.
This is a male doctor that did that to her, presumably to be funny?
She didn't think it was very funny.
Did he think it was a joke? I mean, was that why that treatment?
What she thought was, because she was a woman in the male doctor's lounge, well, in the doctor's lounge, which increasingly are co-ed, and that he was resentful that she decided to go into plastic surgery.
Mm. What do you think is the landscape overall today? I mean, what simply requires thick skin because you're a woman in a very male-dominated profession? And when do we have a medical culture that's an unhealthy one today? How would you size up the industry today?
That is an excellent question, especially good in these times of more patient-centered care and looking at healthcare as a team sport rather than a group of silos. And I think the culture is changing. I think that for various reasons, physicians tend to be a half to a generation behind their peers who went directly into industries where communication skills were more important. I think there's another issue with women physicians, which is that when men physicians take leadership roles in academia or chiefs of departments, they often have a wife, and as recently as 20, 30 years ago, was advised that chair of departments have a wife who could stay home and was a good hostess. And women have a more difficult time with balance. Many of the women surgeons I coach have stay-at-home husbands.
Because that's what it takes to be able to handle the hours and the demands of the job.
Right, and somebody needs to take care of the kids.
I want to bring another voice to this conversation, and that's Dr. Jennifer Rosen. She's a surgeon. She's also an assistant professor at Boston University School of Medicine. Jennifer, welcome to you to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So you've made it as a surgeon in a field that is dominated by men. So walk us through what your experience has been as you're a surgeon, as well as your experience in med school, and whether you felt that you encountered any blatant or subtle forms of gender bias.
So I should start by the fact that I'm married, I have three children, I have incredibly supportive parents, and the person who stays home with us is our nanny, Christine. So, you know, in the words of Hillary Clinton, it takes a village to help with everything. In my medical school experience, I really never experienced anything that at the time I thought was either explicit or implicit bias, until I look back and I see some subtle differences between myself and some of the surgical residents and their guidance. I didn't feel until I got to residency that I had a mentor. I look back now and I see that people were guiding me independent of my gender. I think I didn't appreciate a lot of what I was of being told or not told. I was thinking originally about going into neurosurgery, and I had the experience of sitting down with the person who was supposed to be my guide and next to him on the sofa and put what I thought was a fatherly arm around me and said, "Why does a nice girl like you want to go into surgery?" And I said, "Oh, I just really like it." And at the time, the thought never occurred to me that this was something inappropriate.
And what year was that, would you say?
That was in 1996.
Okay, so not that long ago.
Not that long ago. And then when I went to residency, so residency for surgeons is 5 years. I was married in my first year, and we were pretty equally divided between male and females in my program, and that's even more the case nowadays. There were very few female surgeons who were my attendings and none who were in positions of being chief or chair at the time at my program. It's very different now, of course, in the program that I'm in. And it never occurred to me to have a child while I was in residency, simply because it was difficult for me to juggle since my husband works full-time. So the delay in deciding to have children was something that I decided upon, but I had no role models for being able to manage family and home and a work life at the same time. So I was able to completely devote myself to what I did. So that was never really an issue until I got into surgical practice, which is where I really think things changed in terms of my awareness of the difference between men and women in their practice of surgery.
Listeners, we're talking about what it's like to be a woman in the medical world and also in surgery, a traditionally male-dominated industry, and cases of outright sexism. We had a case in Boston last month that settled for very big money at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. We want to hear if you think the situation is improving for women in medicine, if you think sexism is just a fact of life in the traditionally male-dominated world of surgery and medicine. Call us at 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Jennifer Rosen, you started to say that tell us more about what you might have encountered that you, as you look back, you feel like, was that bias? What was I up against as a woman that other male doctors may not have been?
Well, I think when you talk about residency, which is really where you start to formulate your idea of what your future life is going to be, I had no role models. I had no idea of what it would be. I don't think I personally experienced bias during my residency, partly because I could 100% devote myself to the, at the time, 134-hour-a-week practice. So there was no issue about getting home on time, being able to take care of my kids, juggle all. I didn't have any of that. It really only happened after residency. Although, you know, there are stories about people who had difficulty in having children, coming back into the workforce, taking time during their residency hours.
Margaret Carey, you are a leadership coach for physician executives. And even though the number of women entering general surgery has climbed pretty steadily, I believe the numbers of women now account for 35% of all surgery trainees in the U.S., there are still relatively few women in surgical leadership roles and higher administrative jobs. Why are we not seeing what seems to be a natural next step happen more often?
Good question. And I've thought about that. And I think, first of all, that Jennifer's experience is perhaps less intense than mine. She made some great, great comments about it wasn't until she left medical school that she realized there's been sexism, because that's exactly how I felt. I was raised with brothers. I was used to that humor. And so I think that, and I've forgotten the first question you asked. What was it?
Why we don't see more women, even though they may make it in surgery, why do we not see them very often in leadership roles? Even if they can break through one ceiling, it seems that they then hit another one.
Sure. The numbers are rising now. But there's a couple of things. First of all, the pipeline needs to be filled, especially in academic medicine, where it's pretty much lockstep how you advance. But the second thing, and I, in looking at the numbers, I'm not sure people consider this, is the valid way to compare this to say, let's look at women and men in the general population and figure out and then decide and look at then whether it's deans or full professors, how many women and men physicians are in those roles? Or would it be more valid to look at how many people applied for the roles and got them? In other words, sometimes women make lifestyle choices.
So you're saying it may not be as, it may be partially that when women apply, they're not getting those jobs, and sometimes that women just choose not to apply because they think perhaps that job won't be conducive to the rest of my life.
Right, and I'm saying I don't know. I mean, I don't know because I've not seen a study looking at that, but there's probably a number of different reasons. Sort of like some jobs are, why would you want that?
Mm. We have a caller from Cambridge who had at one time worked in the pharmaceutical industry. This is Liz. And Liz, you're into your thoughts about sort of the challenges that women are up against in the medical world and your own experiences.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was in the pharmaceutical industry, partially selling also surgical equipment. So sort of in this situation, but from a different perspective, and being a female, I always found that I sort of got biased from both sides, of course, and then automatically assume you're sort of not as intelligent. But I guess my question is, what would you say is the approach of women toward each other? And are there biases there as well, even amongst surgeons and other specialties or in healthcare in general?
How within the medical industry women treat other women?
Yes.
Let me put that to our guests. Jennifer Rosen, Margaret Carey, your thoughts on that?
So I'll tell you, that's a great question that I get asked all the time, and there's many levels of it. So there's women surgeons towards each other, women surgeons and female nurses, and then women surgeons and their patients. So I'll tell you, you know, I have yet to encounter a problem where I felt that the nursing staff wasn't supportive or recognized you know, how difficult it is to do what I do. It used to be the thought that female nurses had a bias towards female surgeons. I've never experienced that. But partly because I go out of my way to engage them talking about my kids and my family and my home and my garden and other things that I do. So I feel like I've fostered a relationship with them. The female surgeons, most of my friends are female surgeons who have kids and families, and I found it to be an incredibly supportive network. The other area where I have found it to be difficult, actually, is between myself and women who have chosen to stay home to take care of their children. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of interest in talking about, you know, the stay-at-home versus the working mother. I live in Wellesley. We have a mother's forum, and I found them to be, you know, very welcoming. But behind the doors, you know, we don't necessarily get invited to the coffee clutches that happen at 9:15 after drop-off. You know, I'm not getting to work out every day. I don't look like they do. There are a lot of things that I don't have in my life that they're able to balance or do, or even if they're busy with other volunteer work or other things for their children. And there it is very difficult, and it's something that I've had to work towards understanding that I can't have it all in both arenas.
And Margaret Carrier, your view on how women in the medical community, in the medical industry, treat other women in the same industry?
I'm going to repeat what Jennifer said, which is there are many different women-to-women relationships. And I found, certainly in medical school and residency, the nurses were the ones that helped me, said, are you sure you want to do that? And nurses were mostly female then, and they still are. I think that there is a divide between those that have stay-at-home dad or nannies and those that are able to stay home themselves. But I think that the sort of the queen bee syndrome, I think that that has, for the large part, at least in my observation with my clients, faded out in medicine.
Queen bee syndrome?
Queen bee syndrome is where one woman is the groundbreaker, and she's the person in charge, and so any other women after her aren't as well respected. So think of The Devil Wears Prada.
Okay, the Meryl Streep, the sort of big bad Meryl Streep role.
Right.
Okay. We have a caller from Roslindale, a male caller. And James, your wife is a radiology resident in Boston?
Yeah, that's correct.
So what's your view on what her life is like in the medical world?
It's tough. I mean, she has to go to work all day and come home and try to be with the kids. And the demands of the job are really high. She has to come home and learn and read and try to, you know, compete with her peers for a spot later on when she goes to get a job. And it weighs on her. But, you know, what we try to do is give her a good support network at home and give her all the time she needs and all the time with the family that she can handle.
You know, but of course, the medical world, and it certainly depends on what sector of it you go into, but many people, I think, go into med school knowing it's going to be very grueling, and then being a doctor is going to be very grueling. You know, as in other professions, like being a lawyer, where sometimes you have to just work yourself to the bone in the early years to try to succeed. So let's say you go into that knowing that. What about, has your wife, however, experienced what she would consider sexism, more than just hard work and needing thick skin, but actual sexism?
Yeah, I would say yeah, because I think that the mindset is that if you're going to have a family, it's got to be something that you're going to do completely separate, and it's going to take up more time than what you need to help your career or help advance the people that you're working with. They don't want you to take on extra stuff because, you're going to be distracted because you're having kids, or you better be doing that. So I think she has. And I think it's more of a general not really knowing what it's like to raise a family in such a complex environment.
Jennifer Rosen, James, thank you for that call. Jennifer Rosen, I wonder if you could give us a general overview on what you think it's like for women to work, particularly in your specialty area of surgery. I mean, it's often thought of as a high testosterone area. What is it like? I mean, what does a woman need, who perhaps wants to be a surgeon, what should she know about what to expect when she walks into that world?
Well, the first thing is you don't just walk into the world one day and that's it. You have to be that kind of person. I think that we self-select. I think that we tend to be pretty ambitious people who like to be very hands-on. You have to like to operate to be a surgeon, so you have to like to be hands-on. I like to say that in some ways surgery is women's work. We do some cutting, some sewing, some tidying up. You know, my specialty, I'm a endocrine surgeon. I specialize in thyroid and parathyroid surgery. We have more of a relationship with our patients. I know that a lot of women have chosen to go into areas like breast surgery where it's more of a primary care relationship with their patients, and we really enjoy that. There are some areas within surgery that are much more within that testosterone-driven area that we think about. So, for example, cardiac surgery, thoracic surgery, transplant surgery, orthopedics, and you will find neurosurgery, you'll find fewer females within that practice. As with any competitive specialty, there are long hours expected. I think there's some key things that have changed within surgery, certainly within the past 10 years and definitely since, you know, the past couple decades. We are, as our other caller had alluded to, more focused on patient-centered care, more focused on multidisciplinary teams and team approach to patients. There are work hour limitations now for the residents, which have not extended to attendings. More of an RVU-based model, which is something that's important. The more cases you do, the more pay you get. And so people make trade-offs for their work hours and to be able to balance everything. So I think in your training, it's incredibly intense, but we've gone to an 80-hour work week, which I have some mixed feelings about. I think in some ways we're creating a generation of shift work employees, people who have the mentality that they come, they go, and they hand their patients off, which was never the model that I was raised with. So I think it's very intense. You need to be able to step up, take control of a team, guide your patient along very quickly toward a decision, act in the operating room. You're not just giving a medication and waiting to see its effect 2 to 4 weeks from now, or managing long-term patients. You're really much more acute in your management, so you have to be very hands-on. You know, it's handling a lot of paradox between being active and reactive.
You know, as I'm watching calls come in, it's interesting because we're getting many calls from men who want to talk about this, even though we've been talking about gender bias among women. So I want to go back. I want to go back to a caller. And this is John calling from Pembroke. And John, your thoughts about this. You graduated from med school in Texas in 1968?
Yes, I did. And my daughter graduated not quite 20 years ago from University of Vermont Medical School. And I was in a class of 110, five of whom were women. And the successful women could all curse like sailors and try to out-muscle the guys. And when my daughter graduated, there was 51% were women. And they were very, very different. Their jockeying for position was very, very different. It was much more egalitarian. But that being said, at 35, my daughter gave birth, was pregnant. She's a pediatric intensivist. And she developed a condition called preeclampsia, where a normal blood pressure is 120 over 80, and hers shot up to 220 over 160. And she had to be taken off of her rotation, had to be put to bed, had to be given all kinds of medications. And the level of resentment from her male cohort was really quite extraordinary. They know what the seriousness of her condition was. She never even told me what it was because she knew I'd have flipped out. But there's still this kind of resentment that there are certain things that happen, and if it's related to being a woman, you know, there's a price to be paid for that.
John, you mentioned that when you were in med school, I think as you put it, the women students alongside you had to curse like be able to curse like sailors and outmuscle the guys. Do you feel like that's what was necessary at that time for women to work alongside men? But you said it's more egalitarian now. But is that still part of what it takes to for a woman to survive in that world?
I don't think it was all that necessary, in fact. But the self-selection certainly showed a more masculine leaning, and I'm not saying homosexual or lesbian. I'm saying a more masculine bearing to kind of feel like they could fit in. There were some who didn't do that, but the ones who got the most attention were like that.
So you're saying maybe a more demure, proper woman might not be drawn to that field. That was a sense you got, the self-selection sense.
That's much of the sense that I had, and I don't see that as much the case now because I know a lot of my daughter's friends and whatnot, and they're all bright kids who went to, you know, she went to Cornell, and you know, they're all bright kids, and they all are competent, and I don't think women have to, you know, stake out their ground the way once was the case. And I think that's much of an improvement. But that being said, when my daughter was pregnant and developed the preeclamptic condition, boy, they're saying, well, where is she? Why isn't she working?
Why isn't she carrying her weight?
Does she really have to be home? And that kind of thing. And, you know, they know it. They all took OBGYN. They all know what eclampsia is.
Exactly. John, thank you for your call. And Dr. Margaret Carey, I want to know if any of this rings true to you, but I also want to get your sense of, you know, if we don't fix this problem, if there is some sort of bias against women in surgery and it causes some women to even self-select out, what are the negatives? What's the negative of that? I mean, besides a bunch of frustrated female doctors and surgeons, what effect does that have perhaps on patient care?
Well, that's a great question, because there are many, many studies that show that when there's a great study that about they asked nurses and doctors, do you think you have a team? It was actually in a pediatric ICU. Do you think you work together as teams? What they found out, that the farther away the difference was, and it was when there was a difference, it was the doctors said we're a great team and the nurses said we're awful. The larger the difference, the more patients died.
So there are direct impacts. Exactly. Interesting.
Right. When people don't work together as teams, a lot of, you know, we're all controlled by emotions, no matter what you say. We're controlled by emotions. When we see somebody being abused, it affects our brains similarly to that of the folks who are being abused. This is a very, very a bad thing that happens. And as you know, I don't know if you saw the recent movie Escape Fire, but there are serious problems with patient safety.
That's Margaret Carey. She's a physician and leadership coach for physician executives. She also authored a chapter in the new book, Lessons Learned, Stories from Women in Medical Management. She's been talking to us from Washington, D.C. And we've been on the phone with Jennifer Rosen, a surgeon at Boston Medical Center and an assistant professor at Boston University Medical School. Drs. Carey and Rosen, thank you very much to both of you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Coming up, the artistic director of the Huntington Theater tells us what local arts events are on his radar. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.